This is the Pet Podcast on pets.ca, episode number 42, Dehydration in Cats and Dogs, for August 27, 2008. Hey there, pet lovers. How's it going? And welcome to the 42nd Pet Podcast on pets.ca. My name is Marco, and as always, we're coming to you from Montreal, Quebec, Canada, and today is August 27, 2008. For today's show, we're doing another interview with a Dr. Lee, and today we're going to talk about dehydration in both cats and dogs, and we're going to talk about just how important hydration is and what a serious consequence dehydration can be when our pets are suffering from it. But rather than talk about what we're going to talk about, let's just get right into the interview now. So I'd like to welcome back Dr. Lee to our podcast. It's been a few weeks, as usual. We're taking a little more time in between the podcasts, but hopefully the information is good enough to keep everyone listening. So welcome back, Dr. Lee.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Always a pleasure. So today I thought we would talk about dehydration in cats and dogs. I know it can be a serious issue, and I think that many people don't realize just how serious it can become. So first off, how common is dehydration? And actually, before we do that, maybe just, even though probably everyone knows what dehydration is, maybe there's something that we're missing. Can you give us an apropos definition for, you know, what dehydration means in cats and dogs?
Hydration, basically our bodies, the normal pet is made of 60% water, and when that balance changes and we don't have enough water in our system, that's what we call dehydration. And the hydration affects all levels and all aspects of your body, from brain function to blood pressure to on a cellular level. So every cell becomes affected when that water level drops.
Excellent. And how common is dehydration? How frequently do you see this where people bring in pets dehydrated?
Unfortunately, it's all too common, because a lot of times we will see, and I will see a lot of clients that will say, oh, you know, I didn't even think about the dehydration because I noticed that my dog was drinking. And that doesn't always mean that we are not dehydrated. In fact, with people, that's a big concern, and about 70% of headaches are thought to be caused by dehydration, and that's not even something that's clinically evident.
Obviously, it's common in pets, too. Why do our pets get dehydrated? Why does it happen so frequently?
Well, our metabolism uses the water, so we're constantly losing water, not only through things like urination, but also through what's called insensible losses, and it's just basically through sweat. It's just evaporating, and so we're constantly in need of water.
In terms of people deciding themselves or, you know, getting an inkling as to when their pets may or may not be dehydrated, what test could people use to observe or test to see if their pets are in fact dehydrated?
Yeah, there are a couple of easy things that can be done. And again, these are always a little bit subjective. So it's one of those that if anyone is worried that their pet may be dehydrated, these tests should not replace going to a vet. But one of them is basically just the saliva test. And all you do is just take your finger and wipe it across the gums of the pet and just feel that saliva. Does it feel very tacky? Are those gums dry? If there's a tacky or paste-like saliva, that would be consistent with dehydration.
What if there's no saliva and it's really dry?
That would be even more so.
Right,
and that
right.
Becomes even more important. It should, when a normal hydrated pet, when you put your finger on the gum, there should just be a nice, very moist saliva.
Okay, so, I mean, it makes good sense. The moister the gums, the more hydrated the pet is in general?
Yes.
Okay. What about stuff like, eyes? Will their eyes, I know some people say that their eyes of cats and dogs have a certain appearance when they may be dehydrated. Is that in fact true?
Yes, the surface of the eyes is covered by a thin layer of water. And your tear film is actually made up of several different portions, and one of those portions is water. It's water, protein, and then there's also a component. This is one that it can get kind of subjective, and it's one of those that it's a little bit harder to do.
Right.
So with people that are not familiar with dehydration, it's a little bit hard to kind of start off on that. Also, with severe dehydration, when you get like 7% or more dehydrated, you will actually see a depression of the eye into the back of the skull. And that's because of the body is so dehydrated that the tissue behind the eye actually shrinks, and that eye will actually fall back.
And that's the sunken look that people talk about, is that right?
Sunken look is a very dangerous and very serious sign.
Right. And like we just mentioned a few minutes ago, it is a subjective sign, but if their pet starts to have this sunken eye appearance, then that's a clear sign right away that they need to be calling their vet, I would suggest.
Absolutely.
Okay. And I know there's also, and again, this may be subjective as well, there's like a skin pulling test. Is this something that people can do by themselves, or is it more suggested to bring your pets in for the vet to do it?
Yeah, this is actually a pretty good test. And it's something that, the great thing is that everybody has a normal pet to try on. So,
right. You
know, it is something that I do recommend that you try this test on the pets that you know as normal and get used to that sign. Some people call it the elasticity test or the skin turgor test. And what it is when the elasticity is dependent upon having proper hydration. And so when you pull up on the skin, it should snap back in a nice, healthy manner. When you pull up the skin and it just very slowly goes back into place, that is going to be consistent with dehydration. When you pull up the skin and it doesn't move at all, that's going to be consistent with severe and sometimes life-threatening dehydration. It's important that when we run this test, we do it at the same spot every time. The two most common locations are the nape of the neck and torso. The pet's lying on its side, pulling up the skin of the torso, probably the most common place.
And is that for both cats and dogs?
Both cats and dogs.
Okay. And that's really a good basic point, but we should be doing this test when our pets are healthy. That way we have a baseline to compare with when we think that there's possible dehydration occurring.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Great way of starting to learn and get used to what is normal.
Yeah, and it's true for, I mean, we're talking about dehydration today, but it's so true for all other aspects of our pet's health. I think we should be, you know, running our hands all along their entire bodies, from their feet to the torso to the back to the head. And that way we know what our pet feels like and we have a sense of how healthy they may be.
Absolutely. And like when I've trained new vets, one of the things I often tell them to take a look for is, gosh, you know, when you're doing that spay, look at the spleen, look at the liver, look at the kidney, look at what normal is. Because that way, as you get used to it, then when you see abnormal, you don't have that question. You may, even if you don't recognize exactly what it is, you know enough to say, hey, that's abnormal. And that's enough to possibly really help out your pet and save its life.
Right. And there's also a continuum as well. If you do this often enough, then I guess, you know, you're really able to be in touch with how your pet is feeling. You know, if we try this dehydration skin elasticity test, when they're normal and it has a certain snapback, I guess, and I'm assuming, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, that if they're only a little bit dehydrated, it's going to snap back more quickly. And when they're really dehydrated, it's going to snap back a lot less, as is true for maybe all other aspects of feeling your pet and getting a baseline that you could gauge the level of sickness with the help of your vet. Obviously, this is all in conjunction with like veterinary visits, but you yourself will have an idea or may have an idea or an inkling about just how ill your pet may be.
Correct. And when we, as veterinarians, do the skin elasticity test, we actually usually will assign a percent of dehydration. So you're right, the slight inelasticity, that will usually be about 5% dehydration. And that's what's important about that number is that if you are less than 5% dehydrated, you won't show any abnormality. So on pets that are even dehydrated, there's sometimes no physical changes that will be seen. You actually have to see it on other tests like blood tests.
And this may be like, you know, an aside, but I have a friend that's in the health kind of industry, and he's a personal trainer, and he suggests to me that many humans, your average human, is in a constant state of dehydration. Is this true for many pets, where they constantly could use a little more water, or do pets kind of regulate themselves more effectively and more easily than we humans?
This does become an important issue with cats. They're less apt sometimes to go to that water bowl.
Any reason why that is? Is it a predatory fear from being hardwired so many years ago? Any guesses why that might be?
Well, a lot of cats, we do know that they enjoy running water. And that's one of the great advantages of cat fountains. And I really recommend to all cat owners to buy a cat fountain. And what that does is it circulates the water in a small fountain. And they usually can be, you know, $20-$30 US. I mean, it's not, they're not very expensive. But cats just, it's a survival technique of drinking running water versus stagnant water. And just like anybody that knows backpacking, if you are without water and do not have a water purifier or a way to boil water, take your chances. Take that running, fast-running water versus a stagnant pool. So there's that. And around the house, you know, a lot of times we just have a little bowl of water out, which is not very appetizing for this cat.
Right.
Also, just like for us, I know I really don't like tap water. Cats really do prefer bottled water.
Huh. That's so interesting, especially the fact that they just naturally seem to gravitate toward running water, which, as you've just mentioned, is a healthier water if you're going to choose stagnant or running. Obviously, choose running. It's interesting that cats seem to be hardwired, knowing that, preferring the running water.
And cat owners may find it interesting that dogs are not hardwired this way.
Right. A dog will drink anything, which brings up other podcasts. But, you know, again, I think we need to be aware that, you know, even dogs, if we have the choice of what to let them drink, don't let them drink from still water, you know, from ponds or, you know, marshes, things like this that are very possibly disease laden.
Or pool water. We have a lot of pools out where I live in sunny Arizona, and I can't tell you how many clients I have that they tell me that their source of dog water is the swimming pool.
Wow.
And not a great idea.
Right, and because it's obviously filled with chemicals that are meant to clean pools, not to quench your dog's thirst.
Right, and if, you know, it's not how you would take the water, that's probably a good rule of thumb.
Right. I guess the toilet is also a bad place for hydrating dogs as well, even though they will lap it up with vigor and gusto, not the best source of water for your dog.
And actually, that I have seen a few pets get sick from that.
Yeah, because there's bacteria and possible toilet cleaning products that are going into that water as well.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Good to re-mention that to people that are listening. So I guess this brings us to like the final aspect. How do you treat it? What's the course of treatment for most pet owners? I guess it is simply bringing their pets in to see the vet, but what are some things that the vet's going to do to help treat dehydration?
Well, one of the most important things is that they're going to be looking for the underlying cause. Why are we dehydrated? And sometimes if it's something that's fairly simple, sometimes if there's a mild dehydration and we're in the presence of a fever, perhaps just something as simple as a course of antibiotics may get everything back to normal. If there is a, you know, clinical dehydration, often we'll want to give fluids. And the best way for that is intravenous or IV fluids.
Right, because we don't want people just overloading their pets with water. Is this a bad idea? Maybe you've listened or you've read to some of the signs of dehydration, and then you try and force feed your pet water with a turkey baster or some other, I don't know, method of doing it by yourself. Not recommended? What's your thought on that?
Well, I think if dehydrated and you have a couple of hours to get to the vet, giving some water is a good idea. However, you know, just like you had said, we don't want to overload, and fresh water can cause, you know, especially large amounts, can cause a problem. Also, depending on, you know, what type of underlying issues that we have, you know, loading up a lot of water orally may not be the best situation. Also, with the fluids that we give intravenously, they're going to be balanced with some electrolytes. There are a lot of people that will use like non-flavored Pedialyte. Again, that's not going to replace what we can give. So I think giving some water is okay, but it really is going to be dependent upon what type of clinical signs that we see. Maybe a good idea to ask the vet on the phone, do you want me to do nothing, or do you want me to give some Pedialyte or some water?
And I think that's a really good point because, you know, a lot of people they're self-diagnosing themselves these days and they're self-diagnosing their pets. Bad idea in both cases, I think. But at the end of the day, people aren't treating, like we just mentioned, they're not treating the source of the problem. So even if you are able to, you know, really think or see good reason why you yourself think your pet is dehydrated, even though if you're not a vet, and then you yourself think, oh, dehydrated, let's just hydrate, let's just give it water. At the end of the day, you're not discovering why they are becoming dehydrated, which could, and you could tell us some possible causes shortly, but it could easily be a kidney problem thing or many other problems.
Correct. And that's also another good point we kind of briefly talked about before, but it's really common in human and veterinary medicine to have a situation where we are producing too much urine. And this situation is called polyuria, polydipsia, where we're drinking too much and we're urinating too much. And on these cases, we will see the pets drinking just gobs of water. Cats will usually do it one sitting. Dogs will do it more frequently. But we'll have clients say, oh, no, there's no way my dog's dehydrated because he's just drinking gallons upon gallons of water. Those are typically the pets that are dehydrated. There's actually 25 different causes for polyuria, polydipsia. There's kind of a more common 12 different causes that we normally see, and most of these can be seen on routine testing. But just because your pet, again, is drinking a lot of water doesn't mean that we're dehydrated. And those pets that are drinking an abnormal amount of water often are the candidates of dehydration.
Right, because they're drinking so much water because something funky is going on, something suspicious is going on.
Right, and it means that their kidneys are not concentrating the urine. However, this does not mean that it's always a primary kidney problem. Many times things like diabetes, even though the water is being dumped into the urine through the kidneys, it actually has nothing to do with the kidneys. They're functioning just fine. It's actually a problem with the pancreas. So all these signs do need to be brought up to the vet. One last thing is you had talked about giving them gobs and gobs of water. When they're in the hospital and we are rehydrating them, it is a slow process. Dehydrate too fast, you can cause a lot of problems.
Right. I mean, again, it makes sense, as with other illnesses, when pets are too cold or too hot or too thirsty, we don't overload them with the opposites of water, heat, or cold. We do it gradually, obviously. And obviously our vets are going to have the equipment to do this more gradually than, you know, a human with a turkey baster, not knowing how the rate at which they should be rehydrated anyway.
Correct.
Cool. So thanks for that really good information, as always, Dr. Lee. It's such an important topic. And, you know, like you say, you do see it often. You do see it as a common reason people bring in their pets. So it's nice to actually put a little bit of info out there so people can be aware of it and call their vets when they feel that dehydration may indeed be happening to their pet. So thanks so much, as always. We hope to speak to you in a little while.
Well, thanks. It's great being here.
So thanks again to Dr. Lee for that really informative podcast. Love to get Dr. Lee's input. If you're looking for a primary vet or a secondary vet, Dr. Lee practices in Mesa, Arizona and Phoenix, Arizona. And his website is aachospitals.com. And we can vouch for him. He's a really great vet. So don't hesitate to give him a shout if you are looking for a new vet or a secondary opinion. If you like what you heard and you like to get these podcasts more automatically, possibly the easiest way to do this is by just clicking the subscribe in iTunes button or subscribe in Google Reader button on the front page of the blog, which is pets.ca/blog. And that way, every time we put one of these out and you open up your podcatching software, you will receive our podcast automatically. We love getting comments and suggestions, and you can do so in the forums on pets.ca. Just make your way to the bulletin board. There's a link on every page. You can, of course, comment directly from the blog itself, pets.ca/blog, or if you wanted just to send me an email for any reason, a suggestion or a comment or anything like that, our email address is pets.ca@gmail.com. Thanks so much for listening, everyone. We'll be back in a little while with another interesting episode. And in the meantime, get down on your knees and give your pet a big fat hug. Give him some kisses, some extra rubs, and as always, an extra scratchy under the chin from Marco. Bye for now, everyone.